The Acolyte trailer is here, and I'm feeling me some dark side. Marvel confirms a Nova project. Patty Jenkins is back at Star Wars. And DC gives Teen Titans the go-ahead for live action. All that and more on this week's Multiverse News. Welcome to Multiverse News, your source for information about all your favorite fictional universes. My name's Matthew Carroll, and with me today on the panel, we have J. Scotty St. Clair. What is happening, J. Scotty?
Salutations, I'm doing just swell.
Good, good, buddy. And hey, Lee Hobbs.
Hey, glad to be back on a hot week.
Yeah, it's very piping hot week. Very, very. Jay Sisson, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good. Yeah, I'm excited too. Good to be back together with the band. You know, got the original four together.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like seeing the Beatles.
Just like that.
So much like that. I'm really happy to be back. Thank you guys for picking up my slack last week where I was, it was my mom's birthday and she doesn't ever get to go out. And that was the only day we had that week. So I was like, yeah, let's take her out for her birthday. So it was a lot of fun.
Aww.
It was very good.
What a great son.
Y'all putting up with me not being here. So
we had some good guests.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So first thing we do is we read our 5-star review for this week from Apple Podcast. We have Raiwan sent us one. Been listening from the beginning of this podcast and really do enjoy the takes of Jay, Matt, Scotty, and Haley. They really do know their stuff and break everything down in an easy way to understand. And I genuinely look forward to this podcast coming out every week. Definitely subscribe and listen if you don't already, and keep up the good work, guys. Thank you, Raiwan. Appreciate you, buddy.
Nice. A listener from Great Britain, too.
Ooh. Ooh. Some international 5 stars.
Yeah. Michelin stars.
If you want us to read your Michelin star review, make sure you leave it on Apple Podcasts.
What would be 5 stars in the metric system? It would be different, right? Like, be something like a different measurement.
Jay, don't be like that tonight.
I got bad news for you, Haley. I'm like this every night.
There's something very spicy about you tonight.
That's true. Yeah, I am feeling a little on edge.
What do you want to do tonight, Jay? The same thing we do every night, Pinky.
All right. Well, let's get into our first story. Lucasfilm released the first trailer for their upcoming live-action Star Wars series titled The Acolyte. The show will premiere with 2 episodes on June 4th. Though the trailer is a little more than a minute long, it doesn't show its hand too much, other than to imply that someone or something is hunting and killing Jedi. Star Wars has been on a roll recently with its television shows. Is this going to follow suit?
Yes, I'm so excited for The Acolyte. If you remember, I said it was going to be Sithy murdery Star Wars, and it looks like that's exactly what it's going to be. A lot of really unknown new characters in this show. This one's taking place during the High Republic era, which currently only exists in print form. I've talked about it before, but the High Republic is this 3-phase project that Lucasfilm has been doing over the last few years, and it's across different written mediums, so books, adult novels, young adult novels, junior novels, and a lot of comics, both like on Marvel's regular comic feed and on Dark Horse and some other imprints. So it's very, very cool. And this is the first show, movie, anything that we're getting out of that. And so far, there's only one character. It's the green-skinned character that we know exists in the print materials and in this show. Her name is Vernestra Rowe. And that's all I'll say about that. But I'm just really excited for something a little darker, kind of like Andor was, which went over really well with a lot of people. And of course, I'm always excited to go back to the galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, we learned a lot from this trailer, I feel like, because this was a series that was really shrouded in mystery. Like, we knew it was going to take place as a prequel several years before the prequels themselves, and we knew that it was going to have something to do with the rise of the Sith. But really past that, we didn't know much about the vibe of it or just kind of like the characters or anything. So to me, like, I'm getting a murder mystery sort of feel from it. I'm also seeing like the obvious influence of like martial arts films within it. There's a lot of like kind of martial arts type things going on, which Star Wars has obviously been influenced by across the board, but just feels a lot more present here. So I think what's really interesting about Star Wars is just how they're finding these little cracks and crevices within this universe that they've created to tell these stories. Like, you have this main story, and then you have the prequels, which, you know, are what they are. And then you have the sequel, which, like, I wasn't crazy about, especially the way that it ended. Like, it had its moments, but did not like the way that it ended. And so you put that on paper, and it's like a lot of franchises would just reboot, right? They'd just be like, well, we've kind of fumbled the bag too much. It's time to reboot this thing. And they probably could have done that and gotten away with it. But instead, what they've decided to do is just find pieces within the universe between films to continue to fill in the story and tell new stories. And they've been really successful with that. Like, The Mandalorian, obviously, Ahsoka, Andor, like, these are all stories that aren't reinventing the canon. They're not trying to, like, retcon the prequels and the sequels. They're just telling their own stories where they are, and they're doing it really successfully. So for me, that's what makes me most excited about this, is just seeing how this new leadership at Lucasfilm has really, I feel like, put them in a really strong creative direction. And to me, like, this has the potential to do something that the other shows haven't done, which haven't been super, besides Ahsoka, haven't been super Jedi heavy. This one seems like it's going to be completely Jedi heavy. And as we continue to expand that lore, and James Mangold brings in his even earlier prequel, I think we've got a lot happening here when it comes to just understanding who the Jedi are and what's going on with the rise of the Jedi and the rise of the Sith, ultimately.
I really like what you're saying, Jay, and I think it's really cool the way they're building this universe out, like, a chunk at a time, like these different eras and such. But I also, I fear a little bit of, like, confusion from the audience, you know what I mean? Because we kind of know now that these stories are being told out of order, I guess, if you're a Star Wars fan. But it makes me really wonder, like, does the average person know at all? Like, are they going to watch this and go, like, where is this? When is this? I mean, I didn't know when The Acolyte happened until I looked it up before the show. But, like, and I wonder about people's, how much they need to hold their hand through that sort of thing. Because probably this is 100 years, was what the internet told me before episode one, somewhere in that range, which is like, that's so cool. I love the idea of a whole new place. But at the same time, when you've got all these shows coming out concurrently, and you're building toward this, like, Mando Snips movie or whatever.
As the Hollywood Reporter called it, Grogo and Mandalorian.
They did. I noticed that too, Grogo.
You can hire me, Hollywood Reporter. I'll edit for you.
Like, you've got all that going on, and people are going to think this is with that, and this may go with this over here. And, you know, the fact that it's all over, it's confusing to people. But not to us. I love the idea, though. I think it's really cool.
What did I think of this trailer, you ask? I could like it a lot. But in all seriousness, I really think the last couple of days of marketing, the 1-2 punch between the poster we got as well as this trailer, really did make me go from being excited to really having my, like, hype go through the roof. Like, we had heard previous comments that this series was kind of pitched as Frozen meets Kill Bill, and I was kind of hoping that it would lean more into the Kill Bill aspect of that. And this trailer seems to be just that. Not only are we kind of seeing what, for my purposes, seems to be a revenge tale with the hunting of these Jedi, but it also, just the imagery on display here is a much more mature and dark tone. So while Star Wars is for kids and it's for the whole family, I think this might be one of the first times we're actually seeing a series that might be for, you know, not every member of your family. This is going to be for a more mature audience, and that really excites me. I think, you know, Andor actually kind of did a similar thing there, but if I did have, you know, one little gripe to bring up, because I have to be that guy, there was the one, you know, epic shot of, like, the Jedi all igniting their lightsabers, and it was just, like, the lighting looked a little flat, looked a little TV budget for me. The costumes looked a little TV budget. I wondered, you know, is this one of those volume shots? Are they being a little too reliant on the volume? But there's still time. June 4th is quickly approaching, but, you know, hopefully they can really make this thing shine, because I think it has the potential to really bring in a whole new audience, or maybe some of the audience members that they may have lost along the way.
Jay, you and I talked a lot when Ahsoka was on about, will people be lost watching this show? And I think one of the things that's helping Star Wars excel on Disney Plus, where maybe Marvel didn't, is that they aren't making things necessarily so that you need your hand held, and they're kind of assuming that people don't know exactly what's going on. And it's kind of like, well, if you know this little thing that was said or shown on screen, and you know, like, if you know it's an Easter egg, then you know, and you're like, you geek out, like, you know, we do. Yeah. But if you don't know, it doesn't hinder you from enjoying the thing. And I read an interview on StarWars.com today with the showrunner of The Acolyte, and she said, you don't need to know anything about the High Republic, like, book stuff going in. And I think that's smart, because it's a vast project of material, and so not a lot of people have probably read every single thing. I haven't read every single thing because it's so much to take in. And so I think this show being so unique and singular, I don't think it will make it difficult for the audience to understand where and when we are in the Star Wars timeline.
Yeah, well, and Ahsoka had Rebels kind of always in the mm-hmm. background, you know, as like this extra thing, and all the characters are coming from that show. And like, I hadn't seen Rebels, and I did find a little bit of, I did struggle a little bit at times, like, and I'm used to keeping up with stuff, but I was having myself, like, or catching myself pulling up, like, Wikipedia, you know, during the episode, like, who's this guy again? Like, when did he come? You know, like, stuff like that, which was fine. I mean, I felt like they handled it as good as they could for someone who hadn't seen those characters before. But for this, what it's got going for it, apart from that, is that this is literally an unexplored area. Outside of the EU stuff, I mean, on screen, we've never seen this era before. So it just gives you like a wide range of possibilities in what you want to do, you know, and you don't necessarily have to be like super beholden to something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before we move on, I do think we need to mention like the supporting cast. It's really like a who's who of the sci-fi genre. We got the guy from Squid Game, Lee Jung Jae, Daphne mm-hmm. Keen, X-23, and of course Trinity from The Matrix, Carrie Ann Moss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks rad. It looks really rad. Particularly the story. I agree with Scotty that I thought some of the like lighting looked a little cheap or something, but I'm hoping that'll improve. But yeah, the story is just what I'm pumped about. Just something totally different. And to, you know, it seems like you guess somebody said a murder mystery or something like that. Some sort of just mystery of some darkness rising in a time of light. That sounds fun. It's just a different thing. We normally see light trying to rise in a time of darkness. You know, it's the inversion of that. And I think that's pretty fun. All right, up next, Marvel Studios head of streaming television and animation, Brad Winderbaum, confirmed that the character of Richard Rider / Nova has a project in development. Winderbaum qualified the statement by saying that Marvel Studios is running more like a traditional TV studio and that things can change. Who wants to see this cosmic superhero on whatever screen we can get?
Yeah, I definitely want to see it, but I think the important takeaway here, not to be like the Debbie Downer, but the important takeaway here is that this is in no way a confirmation that there is a project, right? And sometimes we run with these things and we're like, yes, this means Nova's coming in 2026 or whatever. But really, we kind of have to zoom out on it and realize like Marvel is going through a phase right now. They're really working on retooling. They're working on really focusing the spotlight on a few characters rather than a lot. Winderbaum has been quoted a lot in this particular interview. This was with comicbook.com. And in the interview, he talks about how he says the thing that we all suspected, which is that when Disney Plus started, Marvel Studios was really under orders to try to fill it with as much content as possible. And that is something that we just have always suspected, but no one has said out loud. And so there is a shift here in Marvel Studios to like, how can we sort of bring that spotlight down on the Fantastic Four or on Captain America or on, you know, whatever, and try to just really hone in on that and try to not really develop a lot of the side characters as much. And so what's going to happen here is these conversations are going to happen, but they're going to happen with that in mind, right? Like if this project had been talked about when Bob Chapek was in charge, like Nova would have probably made its way to Disney Plus really quickly, right? Because it was during that phase where it was just like everything was making its way to Disney Plus. But we're kind of in this new phase. So I think you just kind of have to take it with that in stride. Clearly, there are people in charge there that are interested in it, and they have investment in the character, and they want to see it, and that's a good thing. But also, we kind of have to walk away and say, okay, but it's not confirmed, it's not in active development, but it is a conversation, which is, I think, encouraging and cool if you're a fan of that character.
The thing that I found surprising most about this was the fact that it seems, since it's Brad Winderbaum talking about it, that it's likely to be a TV project instead of a movie. I think Nova the character and the way he's been set up so far lends itself to a movie really well. And so I really thought that would be a character, just like a really good origin story for a character they could do as a movie. But like, you know, the TV show could be great too, but I guess I was just thinking the scale of Nova would be really cool for a movie.
Yeah. As you mentioned, I think we got to take all of this with a grain of salt, especially with like Brad Winterbaum. Like, he's really been on a tear this week. He's been making a lot of comments. So how believable they all are, I think that's, you know, we still have to kind of wait to see how that's all going to pan out. But in terms of this character, I had kind of previously mentioned that Nova's not really a character that I'm like, you know, chomping at the bit. I always want to say biting at the chomp, but it's chomping at the bit. I don't know why I always want to inverse that.
Just start it. It's your thing now.
To see. But I really do think there is an opportunity to take this character, and with like the comments of like all these previous opportunities they had to introduce him, like there's an opportunity to really leverage this character and think about the audience in mind and how, yeah, we're kind of making this transition away from Disney Plus and those series. But if we utilize these Disney Plus series in the right way and make them for the right audience, like the diehards, like I think Nova's like the perfect kind of character that can, you know, revisit the existing fabric, landscape, and history of the MCU and kind of look at it through a different lens or a different perspective, and almost kind of be like in game a little bit, revisiting certain moments, but with more context. And especially like, you know, the landscape of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like the cosmic side, like we've spent a fair amount of time there, but there's a lot of like culture there that has not really been fleshed out, like the Nova Corps, even the Kree, and like all of the other galactic denizens out there. Like, how did the Infinity War impact them? Like, I would love to see that stuff. And like, final thought here is just like, these comments do remind me a lot of similar comments that we heard about Black Panther, Doctor Strange, and Captain Marvel, all like in the couple of years preceding their eventual debut. So I do think, while it's still an uncertain thing, it does bode well to his eventual debut here, because there's obviously a vested interest in the character.
So the tear that Brad Winterbaum has been on that you spoke of, Scotty, this feels like a PR campaign to me to build back some trust in Marvel Studios TV. And it's timed well, because of course it is, right here on the heels of X-Men 97, which is going to drop today when you're listening to it, if it's Wednesday, March 20th. So they have the TV studios head, you know, going around saying all kinds of wild and maybe wacky things. Like he said, we might revisit Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And yes, I had to mention it on this show, because that's a wild thing for him to go out and claim that they're even thinking about doing something again with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in whatever capacity. He was extremely nonspecific, of course. But he also came out and said Wonder Man and Ironheart are both being edited currently. So he's doing a spread of all these projects that could, but then he's, you know, he's saying, but things might change, but you never know. And so, you know, it's very interesting tactic to take. I almost think it's a little much, and maybe they should have continued to take a back seat for a while, see how the X-Men 97 launch goes, especially with the controversy surrounding the firing, parting of ways, whatever, with that showrunner, because it just feels a little forced for me.
Kevin was calling him. He's like, pick up, Brad.
Yeah. Come on. Kevin was calling all these news outlets and was like, you want to talk to Brad?
He's making the same expression he was during those interviews with Amy Pascal a couple of years ago.
the last thing I want to say about the Nova thing is I really, the inciting incident of this show / movie basically has to be the destruction of Xandar by Thanos. And I feel like that is like a big missing set piece we didn't have in Infinity War. And it's just like, that is such a hook, like starting a show with Thanos and like the destruction that he wrought. And then like, you know, and then poor Nova makes it back to his, poor the last Nova, Richard Rider makes it back to his people. He's the only one alive left. And then half of them disappear, you know, like it's just such a sentiment. Maybe he disappears, you know, and then it's like comes back 5 years later, still with all that power. I don't know. Just seems like it could be a really intriguing way to start a thing, show or movie.
Didn't we talk about like 45 minutes of like unused like pre-visual footage from like the Battle of Xandar? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if we have fewer Disney Plus series and we can pour more money into them, you take that existing footage, you finalize that, and then just, you know, add Richard Rider, and that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. And at one point, they talked about Nova being in either Infinity War or Endgame.
Right.
It's possible he was already there at the original footage of Xandar.
Yeah, in the first draft, he was supposed to be the one to warn Earth it wasn't going to be Hulk being thrown through the Sanctum to warn that Thanos was coming. It was going to be Nova.
Wow.
So that's always been, I mean, it's as far back as Infinity War, that character's been in the conversation.
Yeah, sure. Okay, up next, director Patty Jenkins revealed that she is back on board to helm the Rogue Squadron movie after making a new deal with Lucasfilm. Originally announced back in 2020, the project has shifted around due to changes with Jenkins, the potential of it being made into a television show, and more. Jenkins has long wanted to make what she calls a fighter pilot movie for Star Wars. Will the movie that has so far been 4 years in the making truly take off?
I sure hope so. I do love Patty Jenkins as a director, even though Wonder Woman 2 was an absolute flop. I think she's got a real talent there, and I think she'd do great in Star Wars. None of this surprised me, especially because on the publishing side, Lucasfilm has been kind of, in a way, recanonizing some of their Legends material, their expanded universe material, calling it Essential Legends, and the Rogue Squadron books are all part of that Essential Legends. So I was like, who's going to make this movie? Because somebody's going to. And I'm glad that Patty gets to come back and do it at the cost of her contract with DC, of course. But it could be fun. It could be another new look at Star Wars, like we were just talking about with The Acolyte, something different. Like, they're all kind of war movies in their way, but I think she could lend her view to it and her lens in a way that makes it feel unique and special. And I like to watch the spaceships go pew pew in space.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but these were just Patty Jenkins statements. Disney and Lucasfilm have not confirmed that she's back on this project in any way, shape, or form, have they?
No, they have not, which makes me... I mean, so we know that she's going to get paid for a screenplay, but we don't know if it's going to... That doesn't necessarily mean the movie's going to happen. You know what I mean? So it kind of... It would need to be officially announced by the studio itself. So, yeah, this was all her. Sometimes people will do that if they're really trying to drum up support for something that they have kind of happening, right? But it's definitely not a confirmation, for sure.
Yeah, she made these comments on a podcast, if I'm not mistaken. And
can't trust a podcast.
I feel like Patty was kind of unfairly maligned after Wonder Woman 84. It certainly had some flaws, but I don't lay all of those at her feet. And just like, you know, reading her comments and how passionate and personal this project really seems to be for her, I do hope it pans out. And I hope she gets this opportunity, because I do think she's a fantastic filmmaker. And Hollywood is very much a, like, what have you done for me lately? And it's a real shame that, like, she's been, you know, under such fire, whereas, you know, I think some of her contemporaries have been afforded the opportunity to make similar mistakes and have not been, you know, lambasted the same way.
Absolutely. Up next, DC Studios is going all in on Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow writer Anna Noguera, who will also pen the live-action adaptation of Teen Titans. While the original Teen Titans were introduced in the 1960s in DC Comics, the characters have grown and expanded and found a popular audience with the animated show Teen Titans Go on Cartoon Network. Do we think these beloved characters will translate well in Gunn's new DCU?
Yeah, I certainly think there's an opportunity for it, and I think back the last time we talked about Anna Noguera was probably back in like November, where she became reattached to the Supergirl movie. She was previously attached to it, and then, you know, unfortunately that project didn't seem like it was going to happen. And thankfully she was able to be reattached to this new version under James Gunn's DCU. So I think it really speaks to a synergy that must exist between she and Gunn. And she clearly has a pretty keen interest in, you know, lending a voice to younger characters as well as like legacy characters. So whereas we've heard Millie Alcock's Supergirl is going to be like a darker take on the character, I for one kind of hope that this series will lean into the more like goofy elements from both cartoon series that really endeared so many people to these characters. And maybe it can also kind of take a page out of the book of like Kick-Ass, whereas like, you know, you had Hit Girl in that movie and she was running around and it was really funny, but it was also like was a little questionable, like, is this entirely okay? So I guess my final thought here is, like, really outside of Sam Wilson and with, you know, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we haven't really seen any other heroes in this modern superhero era, like, you know, shed one mantle for another. So for my purposes, we've heard that the Brave and Bold is going to focus on the Damian Wayne version of Robin. So I hope that this film will focus a little bit more on Dick Grayson and maybe his, like, you know, maturation from Robin to Nightwing and the leader of the Titans.
Yeah, you kind of touched on what my curiosity about it is, which is who's the audience, because we have the animated stuff on Cartoon Network, and then there's the Titans show that's on Max that is very much not for kids, and right. So it's, where is this one going to land? Probably somewhere in the happy middle would be my guess, because I think that Gunn wants to try to spread the universe out a little bit and make it accessible to most people. I think it's a great way to already, like, back build your heroes, because these are obviously the sidekicks of some of the better known DC heroes, and then some newer ones that they added, like Raven and Starfire and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it sounds fun from what little we know about it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I've been missing a Marvel DC arms race. We haven't had one of those in a while. And so you think about the Avengers and the Justice League, you think about like Civil War and Batman versus Superman sort of happening at the same time. And now we got Marvel recruiting the Young Avengers in their universe. Yeah. And we got this Teen Titans forming over here. Like, you know, we got the Suicide Squad and the Thunderbolts. You know, you kind of got these, it's a new age of our new arms race is here. And I'm all here for it.
Mm-hmm. It feels weird to me because, as you said, there's not a lot of sidekicks that have been introduced, and we often talk about, like, DC in the past kind of putting the cart before the horse, not introducing characters so that we can care about them when they do team-ups. And I think that, I mean, Titans does have a big following from different quarters, as Yael mentioned, but, like, it does seem like a cart before the horse thing. But this could be, I don't know, when they're just starting to pin this or whatever. So, like, maybe this is phase two. I don't know. But it just feels like you got to introduce the characters. You've got to introduce their sidekicks. Then you have to, you know, it's just like step after step after step before you can have the sidekicks feel like they need their own team. That's like, you got to have a Justice League, it feels like, before you have a Teen Titans, I guess. And it just feels like we're still far from the Justice League. But maybe they'll make up a lot of ground in the Superman movie. I don't know. Well, before we go on break here, we have a Patreon. We're here every week bringing you guys the news, wonderful little news nuggets, and we present them to you like as our best news nuggets just for you.
Fresh and hot pipe and news nuggets.
That's right. Get them. That's right. Get your news nuggets here. Sorry, old timey beard, old timey voice. But patreon.com/multiversenewscast, $4 a month, supports the show and gets you the content ad free. And yeah, it really helps us out a lot. So if you like the content, if you want to give us that one little $1 a week tip, it would really help out. And we'll be right back with more news. So much more news. This was like, do we just scratch in the nuggets right now? All that right after this. Welcome back to Multiverse News, and guys, we are coming up on our 1-year anniversary. Did you guys realize this? You guys out there realizing this? It's crazy. I've really loved making the show with you guys, so we're going to do a celebration in 2 weeks. April 2nd, we're going to be doing our normal live show, and we're going to do a celebration, and we're going to do some giveaways for people watching and some giveaways for people that go and do some 5-star reviews for us in the next couple weeks. So do a bunch of 5-star reviews. We're going to give away bigger prizes and probably lots of them. It's our 1-year anniversary. We're going to do a big blowout right there in the Twitch stream. And we're probably going to stream it on YouTube as well. So give us some 5-star reviews. Come hang out on April 2nd and join us on Twitch and YouTube. And it's going to be a good time. It's going to be a real good time. And people who have been followers of Stranded Panda for a while, we used to do hangouts after our shows sometimes, after trivia. We're going to do that. I don't know if we'll go as late as we used to. I'm older now.
Nope. Not with you can go without me.
I might get a wild hair and go till 5 a.m. Who knows? But we'll probably do just some games and drinking and just invite you guys on the Zoom call. So come hang out April 2nd, and we're just going to do hang out after we do the show. Yeah, so join us for that. Turning to our Spotify poll for this week. Do Deadpool reshoots excite or concern you more? And 71% of you said excite. And the rest of you are pessimists.
Yeah, I think there's that's in line with my own personal insights. I think I'm, 75% excited, and there's just that one quarter that I'm a little worried. Don't delay. It's the only release this year.
Oh, that's true. Oh, please don't delay. Lord.
I think they're probably too close at this point. Like, it would be shocking if they delayed this. I mean, it's July. Like, it's not that far off.
Yeah. I mean, they've done crazy reshoots in the past, just the last second to get one good thing in there or whatever. I'm always reminded of the shawarma scene that was apparently like shot like right before it was in theaters. You know, they were just apparently Chris Evans had that Snowpiercer beard. So you see he has his hand on his face and stuff. It's a lot of fun. So things like that could absolutely happen, you know?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you guys ready to dive into the lightning round?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Me too.
Got a meaty one.
Got a juicy, juicy, meaty, oh my gosh. Big.
It's like the sandworms of Iraq. It's big, writhing and thriving with electricity.
What's happening?
We gotta get the spice. I was waiting for the third descriptor word. I was ready to be blown away.
I don't have one. And I wanted to get us banned on Twitch.
All right. Lightning round. You guys know what we do here. I'm going to say a story, and then somebody, you have to claim it with your name and yell it out, buzz in with your name, and then you get to give your take on that. And once per lightning round, you get a rebuttal. So here we go. Venom 3 is officially titled Venom the Last Dance, and the release date for the film has scooched up from November 8th to October 25th.
Jay, Last Dance, does that mean that this is the last outing as Tom Hardy's Venom? Maybe so, I don't know, but that's a curious title. So that's the question that I'm walking away with in this Sony-verse, which seems to be dissolving by the day and falling apart at the seams. Are they going to take what is most likely their most successful... Oh, man. Yeah. are they going to take their most successful property and send it out? I don't know. But I think it's an interesting time for the Sonyverse right now. Yep. And Venom, not saying it's the last one, but The Last Dance is just an interesting title.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give my regrettal, which is my regretful rebuttal, because I know I'm going to need it later, and I'm using it anyway. Yeah, I think this spells the end for the Sonyverse, right, Jay? Like, this has to. I feel like they're so down. Craven's not going to do well. Craven could be the best movie the best Marvel movie ever made, and it would get cult status, and we'd go, hey, that Craven movie's awesome. But it will not save this universe. Like, nothing will save this universe. And if you lose Tom Hardy, if this is the last one... That's the only thing that's been successful. It made $800 million that first movie. Like it was successful that first one, and the second one made $500 million. They're not bad financially, and a lot of people like them well enough. I remember when they came out, seeing people who were not geeky, like just friends of mine who grew up watching or reading Marvel comics, who weren't like that aren't really fans of the stuff now. Like all my musician friends are like, "Oh, I loved Venom. That was awesome." And I'm just like, "Cool, man. it's cool. It's okay." So yeah, I think it had an audience. So losing that, I really do think spells the end for the Sonyverse. We'll see. Ari Aster has assembled an all-star cast for his next film, Eddington, which began production last week. Joaquin Phoenix, Pedro Pascal, Emma Stone, and Austin Butler are set to star in the A24 feature.
Scotty. A24, Ari Aster, and a absolutely star-studded cast. You need say no more. I'm totally in. I'm really looking forward to this one. I think it's been described as a modern Western, which is kind of a departure for Ari Aster, but his last film, Beau is Afraid, is like, I don't know if that fits into any genre. So it'll be interesting to watch his trajectory here as a filmmaker.
Mm. In April 2023, Variety reported that a Twilight series was in early development. Last week, Lionsgate Vice Chairman Michael Burns confirmed that the project is currently being shopped and that it has shifted to an animated series. Matt, clearly no one's jumping on this one. I'll jump on it. Twilight, I hate it. It's trash. It's terrible. And come at
for
me.
For you.
For everybody. I'm just joking. Obviously, if you like Twilight, it's great. I think the movies are pretty trash. I think, you know, people, obviously there's a lot of fans of the books and fans of those movies too. So if you like it, that's great. I'm just being, I had to have a take, okay? And that's my take. No one else was saying nothing. My mom always said be quiet. If I have anything nice to say, you guys were all being quiet. I'm just going to say it. I don't like these things.
We should have
just moved on. Well, that's fine. I'm just saying.
It's... We should have just like not said anything.
Yeah, just be quiet.
It would have been really funny, yeah. Next
New
story.
Lines, adaptation of Stephen King's Salem's Lot. Let me just say that. Yeah, moving it to... I feel like this... My take really, though, is that I feel like I'm hearing a lot of these kinds of things. Like... This movie is turning into a TV show. This TV show is turning into an animated series. Not to say those are all downgrades necessarily, but like they are like often financial downgrades. They're making smaller bets, and it just seems like a lot of these studios, a lot of the streaming services, and a lot of the studios are just kind of like, this one's going from theater. This was going to be a theatrical release. Now it's going to be a streaming service, a release only. It just seems like they're making smaller bets, which I think is what is inevitably going to happen as the merge purges continue. So I think this is probably related to all of those others. New Line's adaptation of Stephen King's Salem's Lot has been removed from Warner Brothers' theatrical release schedule and will now debut on Max sometime later this year. And Annabelle writer Gary Dauberman wrote and directed the film, which has been in flux since the Warner Brothers and Discovery merger. Speaking of...
Scotty? Oh, go ahead, Jay.
Oh, I was just going to say that we're getting scary close to some Batgirl / Coyote versus Acme territory here. We got this movie. It's done. Stephen King himself came out and said that he really liked it and thought it did his... story justice, and he gave it a ringing endorsement, and then for it to all of a sudden, we're not going to put it in theaters, we're going to put it on Max, it's like, that is one step away from tax write-off. So, you know, hopefully it makes it. We don't know anything about it, like we don't know a release date, we don't know anything past just that it is an adaptation of Salem's Lot, but this is, you know, we can't really trust Warner Brothers anymore with these properties that they make. Sometimes they take that that escape shaft, and it makes us all very angry.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Stephen King will just take that one on the chin if Zaslav decides to shelve it. If he likes it
Didn't
that much.
Didn't he say something else was really good that ended up being pretty terrible?
I wouldn't be surprised. He doesn't like The Shining.
Oh, man. Yeah. What was
I think he liked Dreamcatcher was the one.
I know what you're talking about, Haley. Like, he like tweeted about it, about how much he liked it or something.
It was
it was clear he had been paid to say it.
Oh, the Flash.
The Flash?
Yes, yeah, it was The Flash.
The Flash.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to be re-traumatized talking about this. We talked about The Flash for like 2 months straight on the show.
We're going to talk about it again, too.
Netflix anthology series Black Mirror will return in 2025 with 6 new episodes, including a sequel to the sci-fi adventure episode USS Callister. Matt, this is cool. Feel free to answer my question. It won't count as a rebuttal. Have they done a sequel before at all? Like, I know they've done episodes that sort of had ties together, but I don't know that they've done a direct sequel to an episode.
No, they've never done a sequel that I can think of.
Cool.
USS Callister is
one of my favorite episodes. I love that episode. And this could be a really cool thing to sequelize. And just in general, I've kind of fallen off Black Mirror, which is why I don't know if there's a sequel episode. I saw like the first maybe 2 or 3 seasons. And yeah, it's just always, I haven't been able to take it in my heart. Like, I just can't take that show sometimes.
Yeah.
So,
that's fair.
It can be heavy.
Yeah, for sure. And I really liked how the USS Callister ended. And I'm kind of hoping they don't, you know, break my heart again. Why is that show always got to break my heart, guys?
That's one I always point people to. Like, if they're like, I want to get into Black Mirror, but I don't really know where to start. I'd never start with season one, episode one.
Never.
Like, do not start with season one, episode one, because it's an anthology series, and that's like one of the craziest episodes. USS Callister is very good. Like, it's a riff on Star Trek. Jesse Plemons is in it. Like, it's good. It's, if you're going to pick one to get a sequel, like, that would be my first choice for sure.
I feel like sending them to USS Callister, Jay, though, is kind of catfishing them. It's like, look at this cool sci-fi, hopeful, interesting episode. And then, like, I might as well start at episode one. No, don't do it.
All right. I can't tell you how many times I've been like, yeah, like, I love Black Mirror, like, and talk to people about it. And then they go, I went and watched that, like, crazy ass show that you told me to watch, and I don't know why you like it. And I'm like, oh no, they started with one. I didn't tell them.
It's really funny. All right. FX's The Bear has quietly been renewed for a fourth season, which will film back to back with the third season.
Haley, cool. People love this show. Great. Mm-hmm.
Andy and Barbara Muschietti, the filmmaking team behind the $1 billion grossing It movies and last year's The Flash, Jay, have teamed up with Skydance to launch a brand new horror division named Nocturna. The Muschiettis will co-own the label and run its creative direction.
Scotty, yeah. Andy Muschietti as stated here in the rundown, his roots are in horror. Before the It movies, he kind of did this cult classic called Mama, which just had some, it was a pretty good story and had some great practical effects on display there. So for him to kind of return to his roots alongside his sister, who's been a great partner throughout the duration of his career, I like it. And whether or not his Batman film will pan out, given the reception to The Flash, we haven't heard anything on that front, but at least he has something positive going for him to fall back on.
According to industry insider Jeff Snyder, Scarlett Johansson has reportedly been offered the lead role for the upcoming Jurassic World film, currently scheduled for 2025.
Haley, that's promising, right? We love Scarlett. And it kind of tells us, if it's true, they are going totally different. So we probably won't necessarily see some of our Jurassic World past leads like Chris and Bryce.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scotty, with a, what'd you call it, regrettal?
Yeah, I think I called it that. Everybody gets a rebuttal, a regrettal, and a tiny butt.
Tiny butt.
I'm going to take this opportunity to be entirely pedantic, but it's this whole discourse around this new Jurassic film. Like, everyone's calling it Jurassic World, and why are we calling it Jurassic World? We don't know that it's going to be attached to Jurassic World in any way, shape, or form. Let's just call it Jurassic Franchise, Jurassic Film.
Weirdly, they keep calling it Jurassic World, so I feel like we have to, but it's like, why are you guys calling it Jurassic World? Because you keep saying it's not going to be connected, so...
Yeah, when I say we, I the collective, you know.
The society.
Yeah.
Jay Scotty, I think you're totally right. That was really pedantic.
Yeah. Thank you.
AMC picked up the rights to all four seasons of the post-apocalyptic drama Snowpiercer, including the completed but never aired fourth season. The first three seasons will begin streaming on AMC Plus later this year, with the final season set to premiere on both AMC and AMC Plus in early 2025.
Scotty, did anybody watch this thing?
Nope.
No. I tried once.
Movie's okay. Cool.
Yeah, I like the movie a lot. I know Scott Derrickson was attached to it. I think he was like maybe showrunner, executive producer.
Hmm.
The show has David Diggs in it, or is that the movie?
I got to be the show. I don't remember him being in the movie.
Show. It looks really good. I've seen a lot of trailers for it and always been like, ooh, that looks like a cool show to watch. And then I just never did get into it. Maybe this kind of makes me want to. When a show gets picked up for a second time, I kind of go like, oh, well, somebody wanted to save it, you know, like it was on the chopping block and there's some fandom that came around it to save it. Like, I'd like maybe there's something worthy there.
Yeah, that's always a cool thing. Like, when a show gets canceled and then all of a sudden it gets picked up, so people get to finish the story that they started with, which is always a bummer. Absolutely. When you don't get to.
Yeah, for sure. Universal announced the release date for its latest action flick, With Love, starring Everything Everywhere All at Once Oscar winner Ki-Hoo Kwan. This marks Kwan's first major leading role in his 40 years in Hollywood. With Love is scheduled to hit theaters February 7th, 2025.
Jay. I just love this for Ki-Hu Kwan. I think most people do, right? I mean, most people who've caught him in anything, like, he's always a standout. I think he had such success early in his career, obviously, with Indiana Jones and the Goonies and all that type of stuff. And then he just went a really long time without having work. And it just, he kind of fell into this, like, weird place of kind of being typecast. Like, he's almost seen as like a one note actor, when I think he's proven that he can be more than that. So the idea of him getting getting Loki, getting Everything Everywhere All at Once, like these roles that have kind of pushed him more into the public, and then obviously the Oscar win to like really bring it all home, it's just cool to see that comeback story, like see him kind of get this like career resurgence and get this second act and doing something with it.
Absolutely. Lionsgate released the first official trailer for the remake of The Crow, which stars Bill Skarsgård. The film releases in theaters on June 7th.
Scotty? There are a few films in Hollywood that have the same kind of, you know, legend and mystique surrounding them as The Crow. Like Brandon Lee famously passed away on the set while filming the movie. And this, they've been trying to, you know, get a remake off the ground for so many years. It's been in development hell. I think Jason Momoa was attached to this thing at one point in time. So while I still am kind of on the fence, I don't know how necessary this remake actually is. From what I'm seeing from Bill Skarsgård in the trailer, it does look like it's, you know, going to be at least a serviceable modern adaptation with all the hallmarks of, you know, modern day filmmaking and the benefits that come with that.
Yeah. Tiny, but it just looks awesome. I think this looks great. I was not a huge Crow fan growing up, but I like, always, like you said, it was always this legendary thing. And this just, it looks like it's going to be a faithful retelling and just like, it looks good. It looks really good. That's really all I have to say. Sure. It just looks really freaky. Like it got me amped to see it. So I'm pumped. CBS Studios announced the voice cast for the upcoming Among Us animated series, which is based on the popular video game. Randall Park, Elijah Wood, Yvette Nicole Brown, and Ashley Johnson will voice the main characters. At this time, the series does not have a release date.
Jay, I really like this voice cast a lot. Like, I thought it was really, I don't know much about, I mean, I never played this game. I know the basic premise is that you're trying to, like, you're on a spaceship, you're trying to figure out who the imposter is, kind of like a The Thing type scenario. Somebody's like the liar and you have to figure out who they are type thing. And the idea of that as an animated series, I think, could be fun with the right creative team. Like the idea of like being stranded in space, kind of like the sort of like a workplace comedy in a way, but like devolving into violence. You know, like Randall Park, you know, like for his role in WandaVision, and just like being like Jimmy Woo in the MCU, and Yvette Nicole Brown, like I love her in like everything she's in, Community, definitely. Elijah Wood, and then Ashley Johnson voiced Ellie in The Last of Us, the video game, and she appeared in the show. Like, so these are like some people with some chops, and I think it's a cool cast. Like, it definitely, like, I had 0% interest in this, and then I saw the cast, and it's definitely been raised a little bit. Mm.
For someone that's never played Among Us, you sure know a lot about it, Jay. Kind of sus.
That's pretty sus.
Kind of sus, yeah. Just saying.
Speaking in an interview with Collider, Nicolas Cage confirmed that he is currently speaking to the creative team behind Prime Video's upcoming Spider-Man Noir series, saying, "We've been talking. Nothing is definitive yet. It's just a conversation."
Did you guys hear that? He was on the podcast. We're that good.
It was pretty good.
Thanks, Nicholas.
That was like Nicholas Cage through Andy Samberg. That was not a good Nicholas Cage.
It was good. It was good. Give yourself some credit.
Haley, I'll go. I hope that they sign him for this, because I really do want him to be Spider-Man Noir again.
And this was this is a live action series. Last we talked about it, at least, right?
Yes.
I really would love to see him do this in live action. That would be so much fun.
Oh my gosh, that'd be awesome.
The upcoming season of Doctor Who, which stars Shuri Gatwa as the 15th Doctor, will make history as the first season to premiere simultaneously on Disney Plus and the BBC. The Doctor Who season premiere will drop on Disney Plus May 10th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time with a 2-episode premiere. Matt, I watched this morning. I finally watched the first episode where he's the main guy, his first episode, and it's great. So I'm really excited for Shuti Gatwa's era of Who, and it just, yeah, It's cool. I'm digging it. I'm excited. Harry Potter actress Miriam Margolis, speaking in an interview with News Corp Australia, confirmed that she turned down a role in Marvel Studios' upcoming series, Agatha. She said, "I don't like America, and I didn't want to be in Georgia for 4 months. So I just said, well, I want £1 million. And they said, you can't have £1 million. Or, no, I'm sorry, you can have £500,000. And I said, no, I don't want to do it. So it just stopped.
Haley, I think that Miriam is one of what they're referring to as the dames over there, which is Maggie Smith and Judy Dench. And I think Miriam's one of the other ones. And if you see the clips of them on Instagram, their little table round chats, it's hysterical. It's comedy gold. Those ladies are amazing. But I think this is funny that instead of just saying no, she didn't want to do it, she was like, well, I'll play with them. I'll be like, hey, give me £1 million. Like, just say no if you don't want to do it. It's hilarious.
I'm going to pull out the rebuttal for this one. Like, what's amazing to me is that we've gone an entire year almost of Multiverse News, and we've never said her name on this podcast, and now in back-to-back weeks we've talked about, because last week she like really angered a lot of Harry Potter fans because they asked her about, you know, people who were fans of the show, and she was like, people who are adults and fans of Harry Potter need to get over it. It's a show for kids. Like, it was on
she
20 years ago or whatever. And so, you know, we were talking about that in the lightning round last week about how, you know, like, hey, you just kind of don't take it too personally, you know, or whatever was the conclusion that we came to. But it's just funny to me that, like, we're just going to have like, a Miriam's Corner every week now, you know? We're just going to have to find, like, these, like, just loose, totally, like, loose cannon balls that she's firing off and just talk about them every week.
Courtney says in the chat that she has a travel show with Alan Cummings. That sounds amazing.
Marvel Comics announced 3 new X-Men core titles will be published. The books will be titled X-Men, coming out on July 10th, Uncanny X-Men, coming out on August 7th, and Exceptional X-Men, coming out on September 4th.
Haley, they're really riding that X-Men 97 wave. They're relaunching their most popular team in Marvel Comics history, I'd argue, besides the Fantastic Four. These are led by some great writers. Jed McKay, notably, is going to be doing X-Men, that first one, and he's really well known for his Avengers stuff and all kinds of other writing at Marvel Comics. So hopefully if you love X-Men, hopefully you like these. I don't know anything about what they're going to be like, but then too, if you want to get into X-Men, because I personally find it very daunting to try to get into X-Men comics, this might be a great way for you to start with some brand new ones.
The trailer for Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, released on March 18th. The movie will premiere on Netflix on April 19th.
Scotty, did anybody watch this thing?
I watched the trailer, have you seen a Zack Snyder trailer before?
Then you've
seen this trailer. Yeah, I mean, it's the last one. So the last trailer for Rebel Moon Part 1, we joked that it was like if you told ChatGPT to make a Zack Snyder trailer, this is what it would make. This one is almost more of that. Like, this is like even bigger. It's like you did that, but then you, and it made it, but then you told the prompt, like, do that, but make it more Zack Snyder. Like, that's what this
so
trailer
is. All in slow motion.
a large degree of it. I mean, it's very action heavy. We talked about, and I think one of the criticisms of this movie was like, hey, you can tell that this was a Star Wars pitch at one time, and you definitely can. This one is like, even like, I mean, the lightsabers are so spot on to lightsabers in this trailer. Like, it's unbelievable how lightsabery it is. You know, are you gonna watch this trailer and decide to get into Rebel Moon? Probably not. Like, if you are into Rebel Moon, you're probably excited. If you didn't like Rebel Moon, you're probably not like, I want to go watch that for 3 hours and continue that journey. So I think it's just kind of like, it's for the people who liked the first Rebel Moon, I guess.
Man, I feel like I need to watch Rebel Moon now. That sounds fascinating. Like, when you're making a movie that you're clearly ripping off a thing you wrote for another franchise, like, what do you excise to make it less obvious? You know, like, does the Force exist in this world? I don't know. I haven't seen it, but like, it's like, I don't know. Like, you got to change some things around, but what was not so non-essential to your original pitch? You're like, what can you... Like, it's similar to Seth MacFarlane pitched a Star Trek show and then went on to make the Orville, and it's very much... It feels like he just was... That's his Star Trek show, but they made slight changes to things that made it a little more interesting, so I'm really curious. That's cool.
Yeah, I don't think Rebel Moon was as bad as it's been billed. It's certainly not a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination. It's very dialogue heavy. Like, it can be hard to get through if you're watching it late at night, and it's like, you know, you're trying to kind of work through all this dialogue, and you're trying to catch up, like, who's the bad guy? Who's the good guy? Who's this guy? So, like, you know, you really got to, like, know what you're getting yourself into. But I think it's worth... I mean, if the trailer piques your interest, I think it's worth going back and watching just to see if it's your shtick. But if it's not your thing, this is not going to convince you to love Zack Snyder style movies.
Yeah. Eon Productions has reportedly given Aaron Taylor Johnson a formal offer for the role of James Bond.
Haley. So, this news has sat with me all day long because it broke this morning, and I'm still not 100% sure how I feel about it. I don't feel like negative at all about it, but I don't feel like I've seen Aaron Taylor Johnson in enough things to say whether or not he'd make a good James Bond. If they're going for the opposite of Daniel Craig, then they absolutely like nailed that visually. But yeah, I don't have, like, I thought I'd have a really strong take by the time we got here. And of course I love James Bond, but I just don't know.
Yeah.
Scotty with a rebuttal. I didn't see this coming from anywhere. So my mind was really blown when I saw this, but I'm actually really pleased with it. I like Aaron Taylor Johnson a lot, and I just really wanted to take this rebuttal to recommend to everyone. If you really want a good showcasing for his range, check out Nocturnal Animals. He is chilling in that movie.
He won the Golden Globe for that, I think, right?
I don't know off the top of my head, but if not, he definitely deserved it. Yeah.
Also throwing out a tiny butt. We were just talking about him yesterday on the MCU cast, and like Ashley was saying how like she was worried that when she watched Kraven, she'd just see Quicksilver or whatever. And I was like, but I think about him in that Kraven trailer and Quicksilver, and then all the way back to Kick-Ass. And it's like, those don't feel like the same character at all. So I really do, like, even in his, like, you know, superhero roles seem like they are just so different. And I don't like watch that trailer. I don't even see any of the characters he's previously played. So it really makes me interested to see like how big his range is. Cause James Bond is a totally different hero direction. So I'm pumped for it too.
It makes me think of when George Lazenby was James Bond, his one outing on Her Majesty's Secret Service. He was very much the playboy Bond. I could see Aaron Taylor Johnson doing that, but I just don't know. We'll see.
Cool.
It's a really interesting comparison. I like that, yeah.
Warner Brothers has released a new official trailer for Furiosa, the prequel film for Mad Max Fury Road that stars Anya Taylor-Joy and Chris Hemsworth. The movie will drop in theaters on May 24th.
Scotty, looks good. I don't need to see any more. Let's go.
Stop showing me.
Yeah, tiny, it. But I thought they did too much.
Yeah.
I thought they did too much.
It's a lot. Chris Hemsworth looks really fun, though.
Yeah.
So fun. A new Popeye the Sailor Man live-action film is being developed by Chernin Entertainment and is in the process of being shopped around to studios.
Who put this in there?
This was a last-minute addition by yours truly. It was a Variety exclusive. And my real take is, if they cast Chris Pratt, I swear.
That it's so inevitable. Like, that's the most inevitable thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Like
1,000%. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought when I heard this story.
I can just hear him now being like, get me some spinach. Like,
but it's just his voice.
He's not changing, like, the voice. No.
Got.
It's a good thing he's not a method actor, because between all the lasagna and the spinach.
Man, they balance each other out.
Maybe
you know?
He'd go back to Fat Pratt and we'd have Funny Pratt back from Parks and Rec. Sorry, okay, I don't mean to say fat. Okay. That's awful, but that's how people refer to him back when he was on Parks and Rec.
Yeah, I still think he's really funny, but he doesn't let, like, I think his image now is as a leading man, and like he doesn't let himself get as silly and as, like, when you hear him in outtakes, he's just not as, he doesn't make as big of a swings as he used to. It's like he's being protective of his image now, and I think that's like the worst thing for comedy.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the show. That's the things. Join us in 2 weeks. We'll have more details next week. But join us in 2 weeks for our 1 year anniversary. We're going to be doing a big show with party afterwards and drinks, but you got to bring your own. We can't serve those through the internet. And, you know, but let's all do champagne or something. It'll be fun. yeah, join us April 2nd for that. And let's go around the room and see where you guys, what you guys are doing on the internet these days. Jay Scotty St. Clair.
Yeah, please check out Animation Deliberation wherever you get your podcast. We've got Invincible has just started its second part of its second season, and X-Men 97 is literally just around the corner. So going to be a lot of coverage happening over there. Wherever you get your podcast, check it out.
Awesome. And Haley Hobbs.
Yep, over at Source Pages, we just dropped our primer of sorts for The Bad Batch Season 3 about Dark Disciple by Christy Golden, which is a great book if you haven't read it. It focuses on the character of Asajj Ventress, who is going to show up in the show. She was in the trailer. Then Bingers will have another Dune episode coming out. Scotty, Ash, Bill, and I talking about David Lynch's 1984 movie and the one that was never made by Alejandro Jodorowsky. And then I think Jeff, Ash, and I will be back covering The Acolyte in June.
Ooh, nice. And Jay Sisson.
Yeah, I'm at Commute, the podcast, where you can learn 3 interesting things in about 20 minutes on your commute to work. We were off this week. We ran a rerun episode, but we will be back next week with a new one on Monday.
Sweet. Yes, yes. Check that out. And I'm over on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, as well as other things on the Stranded Panda Network. Check out strandedpanda.com. We got lots of shows over there to check out. And we'll be back next week with more multiverse news. Peace.
You stay classy, multiverse.